to expect. And so welcome to our refuge class. And the inspiration for this, I think, as I told some of you, is that I have a lot of respect and appreciation and some awe for the amount of commitment that many people in our Sangha have exhibited to the practice and to the Sangha and to themselves in participating so much. And some people have been coming for maybe longer than I have to this Sangha. For years, people come pretty regularly. Many of you come very regularly on Mondays for a long time. And it represents, that regular commitment represents, I think, I suspect, a very deep commitment for a lot of people, that you wouldn't be doing this unless this had some real significance in your life. It's pretty demanding, our lives, and to spend one evening every week, I think, is, and some of you do more, is represents a lot of, I think, commitment or interest. And I know for myself, in my own practice, in my own practice life, that it was very useful to have certain rituals or ceremonies or activities that I did that kind of represented or solidified or acknowledged the commitment that I had towards practice and the inspiration that I had for practice. And some of those were formal going for refuge ceremony, taking the precept ceremony. And some of them were things I kind of dreamt up myself or made into a ritual. The second time I went to Asia to go practice in Southeast Asia, I took the plane trip across the Pacific as being a rite of passage or a ritual of renunciation. And what I was renouncing was my kind of egotistical sense of self that I was trying to kind of hold on to and relate everything to that self-concept. And I was really tired of it. And I felt like I needed some kind of ritual or some kind of rite that would somehow symbolize for me that I was renouncing that part of myself. And so I took that trip, my second trip to Asia to practice in Asia, plane trip, as being that, thanks to Korean Airlines. And so I thought it would be nice, I think not nice, but I thought it would actually be useful for us and for you to have such a ceremony, to acknowledge what's already true for you. Not so much to create anything or add anything for you, but I feel that there's enough commitment and seriousness and serious orientation that you've established for your life, that somehow acknowledge that, not only privately for yourself, but in a ritual way, which often has a bigger, deep impact in our deep kind of subconscious or unconscious or emotional places of our life. In a way that just listening to kind of some rational talk about Buddhism doesn't really touch. And also to do it publicly among your fellow Sangha members also can have that deeper impact of the meaning of it. So I thought of, that was the inspiration then to have this ceremony then, which we'll have June 1st in the evening somewhere or other. I haven't given much thought at all where it might be. I thought I'd wait until see how many of you came. To see where, you know, what makes sense. But the idea is to, hopefully in June it's good warm weather. We can maybe do it outside or a combination of inside or outside. June 1st is a full moon, traditional time for Buddhists to gather together and take refuge and take the precepts anyway. And we'll do an evening of, maybe we can have a potluck, dinner together, and then do a sitting together, and then I could give a short Dharma talk. And then we can have a ceremony with chanting and various things, which we'll do kind of traditional things. But where we're going to do that, I don't know. So if any of you have any ideas, seeing how many people are here and where it might work. One possibility is to ask Jack Botanica to use his backyard. We used it for chanting before, and I think he'd be delighted. And I think it's big enough. And or if any of you have any ideas. And then as preparation for going for refuge, I thought of then having these four classes as a way of for all of us to think more deeply, reflect more deeply about what it means to go for refuge and take the precepts, so that it has a little bit more value, a little bit more conscious intention goes into doing that ceremony, rather than just showing up, you know, after a busy Saturday and just sitting yourself down. There's this month-long kind of reflection on it and thinking about it and participation with the fellow Sangha around these issues. And then coming together with that amount of intention has much more power, I think, for all of us. And what it means to go for refuge, I prefer to see as being something intensely personal, very personal. And I don't really see that I'm here to kind of tell you what it means to go for refuge. I mean, I'll tell you some of my ideas and some of the traditional ideas. But that's not really the point. The point is really to, the ceremony is really to acknowledge something which you've made your own. And each of us probably has a little or very different understanding of what it means to go for refuge, what the Buddha means for you, what the Dharma, what the Sangha, and what the practice is, and what the precepts are. And I respect each of your understandings and each of your orientation that you have. Anybody who comes as regularly as so many of you have done inspires me. So I mostly wanted to find some way of channeling and acknowledging for yourself what's already true for you, not so much add anything to you already, you know, on top of that. Going for refuge is considered to be usually the mark, not the mark, but it's very difficult to decide who's a Buddhist in the Buddhist world. But the common kind of criteria that often you find many people refer to is those who've gone for refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is who is a Buddhist. And aside from that kind of common denominator, a common commonality that many Buddhists share, there's a lot of different theologies and beliefs and practices and teachings that we might not share with each other, with other Buddhists. But all Buddhists share those three things, taking refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha. And so it's usually considered kind of becoming a Buddhist if you do it kind of in a formal way. But you don't have to do that if you don't want to. There's two understandings traditionally in the Theravada tradition of what it means to go for refuge. One of them, and these are the two Pali terms which you don't have to learn, but one of them is Lokiya and the other is Lokottara. And Lokiya usually is translated as worldly, but I prefer the translation of maybe customary or conventional. The customary understanding of going for refuge. And that's usually where maybe you become a Buddhist, you know, you're a Buddhist. Or you have some. You take refuge in the Buddha, and you take the historical Buddha as an exemplar of a possibility, of a potential, of someone who has attained something. The Lokottara understanding, which I kind of prefer the translation of the transformational understanding. So the customary and the transformational, and the customary just belongs to kind of the religious conventions and customs. You know, all kinds of different religions have different customs and. Cultural customs and religious customs and ceremonies and understandings. And some people who grew up in Buddhist countries just kind of take them on almost for granted without thinking about them very deeply because they're so customary to their cultures. The transformational understanding of the refuges is it's not that you're a Buddhist, but rather it's a fact of being a Buddhist. In the sense, I think, wonderful sense they say sometimes in Christianity, the difference between, I'm a Christian, so-and-so is a Christian, and so-and-so is being Christian. There's a certain characteristics and qualities that a Buddha has. And if we discover those qualities for ourselves and those understandings for ourselves and live from that, then we're being a Buddhist, rather than, I don't know what to do with the verbs here.
doing rather than
yeah maybe
fact.
Yeah doing rather than being. There's this wonderful story, a famous story now in the Vipassana world, of some woman who came, who'd done I guess many Vipassana retreats, and came and told one of the teachers that when she went home, she had a problematic relationship I guess with her family. She said when she goes home to her family, when she tries to be a Buddhist, or when she's a Buddhist at home, it's a disaster. But when she's a Buddha, then everybody gets along really well. So there's this, you know, the customary and there's the transformational. And I think most of us relate probably a little bit. Both of them are wonderful. I deeply respect both approaches. And they're not so separate from each other. They kind of overlap. But I think for most of us here, it's a transformational understanding that really speaks to us. That there are qualities of awakening, of compassion, of mindfulness, of generosity, that of peace or calm or safety or something that we get from the practice of Buddhism. And those are the qualities of a Buddha. And we start recognizing them in ourselves. And taking refuge in the Buddha from a transformational point of view is taking refuge in those qualities and that potential that we have. It might not be present always, and that's part of the reason why we take refuge, is to kind of re-inspire them or to water the seeds of that potential, those qualities. And that's true with many different things in Buddhism, that there's a kind of a customary point of view of understanding them, and there's a transformational. And that's true for the precepts. It's true for going for refuge. It's true for the acts of generosity. It's true for you name it, I think. And the transformational is when it's a quality that comes out of you, and it's not really a dualistic relationship that's happening between you, the doer of something, and the object of the doing. Rather, it kind of arises out of you in a kind of natural, open way. I like very much the image of an open hand. And, you know, the clinging is really the source of suffering for us. And I think a closed fist is kind of the great source of not only suffering for ourselves, but you know, it can do potentially a lot of harm in the world. And what the closed fist does, it covers up the soft, tender part of our palm, which is really a delightful piece of tenderness and a wonderful way of being in touch with the world is through the fingertips and the palm. And the open hand then is not dangerous. The open hand is usually in Buddhism. The open hand, is it pointing down? Yeah, I think the open hand of the Buddha pointing down is, does anybody remember the symbolism? I think that's the offer of peacefulness, right? Of fearlessness. You remember? And there's an open hand that's up, you know? There's an open hand up, which maybe that, I think this is fearlessness. And I think this is, I have to look it up. I'll tell you next week. But the open hand. And again, the open hand is this place of vulnerability, of tenderness, that intimacy can happen and arise out of. And the same thing, I think, we can talk about an open heart and an open mind. And I think that what we discover is this open-mindedness, open-heartedness, open-bodiness, where tender qualities of being, which often get squashed when there's a lot of clinging, a lot of holding, we begin recognizing them and appreciating them and wanting somehow to make them more part of our lives. And one way I understand going for refuge is it's a conscious choice for people to reorient their life according to the values that they're discovering through their practice. You know, it's pretty easy. I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say easy. It's hard enough. But it's one thing to understand some of the possibilities of an open heart and open mind in formal practice, sitting or on retreats. But it's a whole other thing to want to bring those qualities into our normal life and everyday life. And so taking refuge and taking the precepts is a way of beginning to wanting to try to reorient our life according to deeper values of what we feel is ultimately or the greatest good. And then, you know, the wonderful story that I told on Monday of putting the begging bowl in the water and the Buddha's bowl going up current, going against popular currents. And so often reorientation is something that we need support in. And having a sangha and having rituals of commitment can be a great help. None of you need to become Buddhist by doing this. When I marry people, I'll only do a Buddhist weddings, but I'm willing to kind of drop pretty much most of the Buddhist vocabulary. So kind of Buddhism is kind of camouflaged. but the elements that I want in a Buddhist for a wedding that I'll do is there has to be some going for refuge as part of the wedding. And going for refuge, and what I they can either do the formal Buddhist refuges, Or what they can do is know what the Buddhist refuge are, and then come up with some rewording that's really their own making. You know, what they can take refuge in. And what I explained at the time of marrying, preparing for the wedding, is that marriage is something, my understanding of marriage is it's something that happens between two people, but also in a larger context, that the marriage should occur in a larger context, something larger that holds it, besides the wishes and desires and the love that the two people might feel. And that larger context can vary depending on who they are, the people. But for a Buddhist wedding, then traditionally it'd be the practice itself. Somehow you're holding it in the larger context of refuge in something beyond just your personal self, your individual egotistical self. And then what that means is up to each person to figure out. Take refuge in the Buddha is take refuge not in the personal small sense of self, but perhaps in the wider sense of an open-heartedness that is not necessarily identified with a small sense of self. And I do the same thing with the precepts, where I ask people to kind of reflect on the Buddhist precepts and come up with their own wording for that also. So I want to say what I've already said, is that this is really a ceremony that we're doing for you and not for Buddhism and not for me. And we'll use the traditional words, but how you interpret and understand that for yourself is really something that is only... It's something you reflect on and make for yourself. The Pali words for going for refuge, Buddham Saranam Gacchami. Saranam means refuge, and Gacchami literally means to go. I like it a lot because it's kind of an active verb, to go. I take refuge is, I guess it's active enough, but somehow it's like you're appropriating something. Rather than to go for refuge, to walk for, the word is literally to walk, gacchami. To walk for refuge, to go for refuge, is actually to move forward in a motivated way, in a conscious way, in order to move into some new orientation that you have for yourself. And I think that's a very important part of going for refuge, is that it's an intentional act. Nyanaponika, a famous writer, distinguishes between three levels or three aspects to our humanity. He says there's the intentional, there's the understanding level, the cognitive level, and there's the emotional level. And going for refuge has all those three aspects to it. There's the intentional aspect, which you actually choose to do something, to actually enter into this new orientation, to kind of find its meaning for yourself, and have it resonate, see how it resonates and corresponds with something which is true for you. And then take refuge in that quality, those senses. So there's an intentional part. And then there's the part of understanding. It's said in the ancient commentaries about what it means to go for refuge that the word gacchami, for going for refuge, means the same thing as to understand or to realize. So to understand the Buddha or to realize the Buddha also is one of the meanings for taking refuge in the Buddha. So there's an understanding part. And understanding has many different meanings. Or to realize. And then the third is the emotional. And for me, you know, my faith in Buddhism or in the Buddha or in awakening or in the practice is, you know, it's, sometimes I feel it's out of bounds or something. It just, you know, it's, you don't see it that often because I don't often express it, but I have a tremendous amount of faith. I'm kind of wallowing in faith. And kind of devotion. And I think the ultimate thing that I have faith in or devotion to is the practice itself. And then some of the things that are associated with that, and there's many things, but the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And And there is that aspect, I think, of going for refuge, that it's also an emotional event. It's something which is heartfelt. It's an act of devotion or act of faith, of inspiration. It's an expression of confidence, of perhaps of love. Hopefully, it's a experience and an act of joy also. That there's actually great joy in discovering these qualities for ourselves and taking refuge in them. It said also that the refuges are protection, and they protect us. And to paraphrase Trungpa, who was asked what the Buddhist, he asked, you know, these protection cords that they have sometimes in Buddhism. He was asked what it protects you from, and he said it protects you from yourself. But also, I think so. The refuges are also a protection. And I think, you know, in a sense, they're protection from suffering. And I think to understand Buddhism, understand refuge, to understand the precepts, is also to understand the world of suffering, and understand our individual participation in our own suffering. Not that all suffering is self-induced, but there is a big part of what we do in Buddhism is understanding our responsibility, our role, our participation in clinging and aversion and holding in gross and subtle ways that create suffering for ourselves. And to see the alternative to clinging, to holding, to aversion, to hate, and to see that the alternative to that and wanting to find some place to protect yourself from that are tendencies we have within us to be egotistical, to be full of hate or aversion or confusion. I think to want to find alternative, to want to orient our life away from that, is a very difficult thing that probably most of you have realized. And going for refuge is a protection in a sense from those qualities within us. So my ritual of going across the Pacific was, you know, my attempt to kind of more fully acknowledge this reorientation from what I thought was an unhealthy way to live for myself. So that's some of the traditional understandings of what it means to go for refuge. And part of it, the ceremony is also taking the five precepts. And we'll have a chance to talk about that some. I'm actually, you know, I feel actually really inspired that so many of you would come, and that you share enough, we share enough inspiration and faith and all that, to want to come here on a Wednesday afternoon and do this. So it's really wonderful for me to feel this and maybe our shared faith can resonate with each other's. So do you have any questions or any comments at this point? Anything you want to bring up? Yeah.
I have a question about the precepts. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Probably not now, but if it's simple, you can ask a question.
Well, it's a concern that whenever I'm in a situation where people are taking the precepts, I won't take the first precept because, for instance, in my garden, I know I will kill intentionally, or a mouse gets in the house. That's the thing. So I always have that. I hold that. Uh-huh.
That's beautiful. So we'll discuss that during this class, the question of killing and what it means and interpretations and things like that. But you know, these things are tremendously flexible to interpretation. So it's really a personal thing you're doing. So from your point of view, how can you say these precepts that has meaning and value for you that involves some kind of commitment? And so Maybe it applies to a certain area of your life and not other areas, and that's fine. That's a fine way to do it. I thought also it would be good, there's so many of us, but still, I would like to just go around the room and everyone just say their name, so that all the names can be in the collective.
I'm Stephen.
I'm Pat.
Sue?
Elsa?
Louis?
Annika?
Bernice?
See the floor first, incarnate.
Oh, Floyd?
Bernice?
Stacy? Paige?
Paul?
Margaret?
Tara?
Evan?
Yvonne?
Bill.
Pesha? Oh. Pesha, huh?
Mary Frances.
Beth.
Peggy.
Allison. Judith.
Barbara.
Dave.
Cheryl.
Is that everyone? Did this row?
Michael.
Elizabeth.
Gloria.
Frances.
Steve.
Elena.
Jen.
Great. And I also thought that it would be nice and maybe important even for you, everyone, to have a chance for some discussion about what all this means. And it's a large group to have a group discussion, and everybody's going to have a chance. So I thought we could break into groups of three and then just have a conversation amongst yourselves about why you came to this class, and the idea of refuge, and why you're interested in doing it, and what it might mean for you. If you find that some people find such things, some aspects of this to be intensely personal, and don't want to share the most personal sides of it, you don't have to then. You can do the less personal sides of it. Whatever you're comfortable in saying. So is that enough kind of instruction? What to talk about? I'm sure you have lots to say. So why don't you form little groups of three, and why don't you just form the groups first in silence, and then I'll start tell you when to start. Yeah, why don't you join someone, anyone? Yeah. No. So what I'm going to do is, it is going to be somewhat casual, but it's important that everybody has a chance. So about every 4 minutes, I'm going to ring the bell. And somehow that's supposed to give you some, and we'll do this for about 12 minutes. So that'll give you some sense of, make sure that everybody has a chance to speak. Okay? So does anyone move to say anything about what that was like, to have that conversation? Or did anybody hear a different perspective that was kind of novel or give you a new idea or inspire you or anything when you heard it from your friends?
Best thing I heard in our discussion group was someone saying, as they explained why they wanted to take refuge, and that until they said it, they didn't really know why they were doing it. I mean, until they really had a chance to speak and the words came out. And I thought that was good, because I mean, that's sort of how it felt for me, too, that until I said it. It was something that was inside. I didn't know what I was going to say.
Sometimes some things only become real when they're spoken, or only come into existence when they're spoken. Great, thank you.
It's true. It's like there's a difference between just maybe thinking about it often and then speaking. Deeper quality to it.
Speaking with two other people here felt like an active refuge in Sangha.
Can you say more about that? How so?
Perhaps I could speak to the same issue. I find it interesting that always expecting difference to find commonality is very enriching.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel like refuge when to find similarities rather than differences.
Yeah, I would actually expect a lot of similarities, even though I said everybody might be different. It's maybe for me an act of faith rather than anything you could know for sure, perhaps. But I think at the heart, the experience of awakening is the same for everyone. I think it has to be that way. And so, and some of the qualities that come out of that, then something we can all recognize together. And when I meet someone who I feel like something in them resonates with something I know in myself, it's really a delight. Thank you. One of the sentiments that I have often in relationship to practice or coming out of practice is an experience or a sense of gratitude. And it's not often the sense of gratitude doesn't really have an object sometimes. It's just a sense of gratitude. And one of the things that when I've been at Buddhist centers where there was some chanting after the sitting, for me, the chanting and the bowing that happened was a way to give expression to that gratitude. And that if I hadn't had those ritual forms of expression, I wouldn't kind of obviously have had nice ways to kind of give voice to those sentiments and feelings within me. And I think that's part of the value of ritual, of refuge, of sangha, perhaps, is to give an avenue for expression for things which in our normal life maybe wouldn't get expressed at all. Anyway, so gratitude. So for me, going for refuge has a quality for me personally of also great gratitude, and just gratitude in general. But also, it's very easy then to feel gratitude. Maybe this is the customary understanding of refuge, maybe. But then gratitude towards the Buddha, gratitude towards the Sangha and the Dharma, and actually in a quite literal sense, not in the kind of more personal sense I talked about before, in the transformational understanding. Anything else that anybody wants to say?
Which didn't come up during the talk, but how encouraged me to do this. I was really impressed with your ability to hold this concern you had, which I had too, just simply. But when you talk about, it's wonderful to find that we connect with people because we're similar. It's scary for me. And that's what's scary for me about Sangha. Because within a Sangha, or that connection, is the pull to agree, to feel connected. And for me, much more important is the pull to honor everything about myself and everything about the other person, whether I feel the connection,
uh-huh.
whether I feel that way or not,
uh-huh.
or agree or not. And so, you know, it's like whenever somebody starts talking, and that starts happening in a group, I can just feel this part of me that wants to say this, and then it's scary to say it.
Uh-huh.
You know, which is, I don't know. You know, I mean, I want it to be a place where I cannot feel the same way as somebody else. I want it to be a place where I can have other stuff and other needs, disagree, and that people see my connectedness to them,
uh-huh.
through that, and that I see theirs.
I think that's very beautifully said. And there is, you know, there is always a danger when you have any group of people together, especially around religion, to conform and to agree and to have shadow sides, things that are not considered proper to talk about. And the most famous one for Buddhists is anger. You know, Buddhists aren't supposed to be angry, so you better not show your anger on the Buddhists. And so that can be quite dangerous to that kind of attitude. What I would hope that we have in common as a Sangha, kind of, you know, I hear even interpretation, you know, there's different interpretations, but what we have in common is a practice itself. And the practice means that you're never going to close your heart to anybody. And so it's a safe place even to act out, it's a safe place to be angry, a safe place to be disagree with people. Even if you disagree with people, this is a community of people who are not going to turn their back on you. They're going to practice not doing that. They're trying not to do it. There's a commitment to doing that. We don't know what we're going to do, right? But that's what practice is a practice. It's not necessarily, you know, we decide to be saints. But the practice involves a commitment, and the commitment, I think, is to stay open to everyone and not to turn away from anybody because they seem different or it's uncomfortable or something. So I don't know what this is. More than that, I mean, hopefully both are true. Hopefully it's a place where we do feel some commonality, or and a place where our individuality stands out.
I did feel connected in talking, but I can just say
the fear.
And I'm okay with that.
I love it. No, I love it. I love it.
I don't need you to be taken.
Yeah, so good. So now we had two people who kind of raised issues that make it difficult, and I think that's really great. So we actually makes it much more real. So you know, you're all invited or all encouraged. If you have really, this is Buddhism is supposed to challenge you. If it doesn't challenge you, then it's probably not doing you much good. And to be challenged is to have, you know, it's not always, but at some phases of your practice, to have questions or uncertainties and doubts and things like that. And so to give voice to them, just like someone said to give voice to why they were here. You know, you discover something that you didn't know before. But to give voice to some of the reasons you don't want to be here, or give voice to some of the reservations one has, or hesitations, or criticisms one has, also allows for a kind of deeper clarification to happen that wouldn't happen if you just kept it quiet to yourself. And I really hope this is a safe place for us also to disagree and all that, and be different from each other. So given that, any other comments? Or is it too close to 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock to open the floodgates?
kind of what you said, and that's the fear of participating in the Sangha. And my own personal take on that is, or at least part of it, is when you get into this deeply, you become very vulnerable. And so I have this feeling of vulnerability. And you can wander around in the world and frequently find your vulnerable side pretty well trashed and stepped on. So it's an interesting experience to just kind of put your vulnerability out there, and in the Sangha, well, you know, am I going to get stepped on or not? So that's kind of my own variation of the fear of participating in the Sangha. It's an interesting challenge.
Get stepped on in a nice way. So
next week when we meet, we can talk a little bit about taking refuge in Buddha, and maybe, you know, each of the 3 days we can be Buddha next week, and then following week Dharma and then Sangha, and then we'll weave through that also a discussion of the precepts, and I think actually probably the precepts will be more lively, much more of a challenge, and we could spend actually, you know, the rest of the year, the precepts. But one of the things you might reflect on in this week as you go, you know, as preparation for the next class, is just reflect on what this word or this idea of a Buddha means for you, and what are the qualities that you identify with a Buddha. And if you think about qualities that you think that a Buddha has, this is the important part of the exercise. See if you can notice those qualities in the people you meet during the week, or notice them in yourself, so that this notion of Buddha is not so removed or separate from just people that you meet, friends and family and neighbors and strangers. See if you can notice that in people, that whatever those qualities are that you revere or honor or are inspired by in this idea of a Buddha. And also, I trust that all of you know the precepts. If you don't know the precepts, you can let me know and I'll write them out for you. And so you might look at them each day. You might write them out for yourself. And if you, and at the beginning or the end of your daily sitting, you can just read them or recite them or something as a way of just making them part of your day. So there's a little more reflection than normal about these precepts and what they might mean for your life. That seem okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Could you write out the chant?
For next week, I'll write it out. Okay. And I'll pass them out to those who don't know it can read along.
With a translation?
Yeah. Anything else?
Just when you think of if there's anything that we're going to be reciting on the 1st of June, if we could see that.
Probably so you can learn it, right?
No.
Or so that you know what you're getting into.
Is that what it means?
Yeah, it's a nice request, and mostly it'll be the basic chants we all know already. It won't be anything really new or different. So that's maybe enough for today. So, thank you all.
Thank you.